Give me a bottle of booze. Here's my dollar. Suck my...
KUSF San Francisco.
Good evening. Welcome to Classics Without Walls, the anti-warhorse zone on KUSF, your classical alternative. I'm M. Theo, the hemicranial Sasquatch of Bay Area Classical Radio. And what we have going on in Studio B right next to me is a shape note singing. It's in progress, and I'm just going to let these good folks do some more music before introducing themselves.
La 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 la
If you're not familiar with shape note singing, the sacred harp, southern harmony, there are a whole bunch of names it goes by. One of the oldest, possibly the oldest, truly American art form. We have a group of shape note singers. Tell us who you are.
My name is David. I'm from Oakland, California.
And I'm Carolyn from San Francisco.
Hello, I'm James from Berkeley.
Chris from San Carlos.
Hal from Berkeley.
Jeremy from Berkeley.
Jill from San Francisco.
Rebecca from Oakland.
Susan from Oakland.
Natalia from Berkeley.
Inder from Oakland.
Mark from Berkeley.
Betty from Oakland.
Jim from Berkeley.
All right. You're in the studio this particular night for, you might say, a foretaste of the all-day singing coming up this Saturday. We'll hear a little more about that later. I wanted this to be as loose as possible and as raucous as possible in the style of a true shape note singing. So we're going to play it very loosely tonight. And our studios, as you know, operating on a shoestring here at KUSF. You'll just have to deal with the various ups and downs of balance and so forth, because that's the way it goes. If you have questions, by the way, you are welcome to attempt to call at 751-KUSF. That's 751-5873 here in 415. But God only knows whether we'll be able to get to the phone. So welcome to try, and good luck with that. I suppose I should say I'm Mark from Berkeley, as well as M. Theo from KUSF. And why don't you guys dive in and do something you want to do, whether that's tell us something about the origins, or tell us something about where it's going, or sing some more music.
Well, I think we should give people a visual picture of what we're doing here. The singers, there are 14 of us, and we're all arranged in what's called a hollow square. So in other words, all of the four parts, the tenors, the altos, the trebles, and the basses, are standing, actually we usually sit, but we're standing facing into the center of a hollow square. And so this isn't performance music. This is music to be enjoyed and experienced and engaged in with all of our hearts and energies. And so what we're going to do is sing a few more songs, and hopefully you'll be given the bug and show up on Saturday to sing with us.
I'll call this song is called Rainbow. It's 3:44 for Earth Day.
La sola fa sol.
Oh,
1947, Granville. This is a song written by someone that we know only about 20 years ago.
Whereas this book that we're singing from is originally published in 1844, and many of the songs are from that time frame. Some of them, the tunes antedate that, even from Renaissance times. But it's exciting, I think, in this tradition that we're not replicating something that happened a long time ago. It's a living tradition people continue to take part in. They continue to write in this this style. They continue to sing, and that's what we'll do now.
For instance, the tune that we just sang, Rainbow, was from 1785.
Hold on. This one's from 1986. La fa la la. Singing the notes. And the notes that we're singing are shaped notes, four syllables that take over the solfege. So instead of do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, we have fa, sol, la, mi, fa in the major scale. And these shapes were invented in 1793 by a guy named John
Tuft.
Tuft. Is that right?
I mean, I think it's been contested.
Yeah. Anyway, so okay, let's get into a big discussion. And then they were patented, and a book came out in 1801 called The Easy Instructor. It was the first book that used this system of shapes. And it caught on really, really well in the early parts of the 19th century. Most tune books were actually published using shapes. And so it became the tradition that what you do is you sing the shapes, the notes, on the page as a way of learning the melody, getting it into your ear. So then when you get around to the words, you have a lot more familiarity with the melody and give it a little bit more heart. So that's what we do, and that's what all that noise is at the beginning of the songs.
I'd like to sing 29 on the top. Mm-hmm.
It's also known as Sacred Heart music, sometimes Southern Harmony, and very often referred to as that infernal racket. Now, I walked into the studio after a full day of a vicious migraine, and it is now gone. So whoever, whichever one of you it was that said it can take care of that, absolutely right. We've already had a couple of calls, one very appreciative, and one saying, oh, these are very interesting harmonies, but none of them can sing. Which brings up that age-old question. What is the purpose of making music together? One of our long-standing themes here on this program is that Western chamber music was never written to be performed. The whole string quartet and trio and quintet, etc. repertoire was written for the enjoyment of the people playing it at whatever level they were capable of it. Does anybody want to say a word about vocal quality and technique and all of that, this wonderful raucous style?
Well, it's often said of Sacred Harp that I would cross the country to sing it, but I wouldn't cross the street to listen to it. In fact, I might cross the street to not have to listen to it. It's the epitome of that chamber music idea that you mentioned of being for the performers, quote-unquote performers, and not for the listeners. It's definitely singer's music. Our just being full-bodied, our throwing ourselves at it is a pretty cathartic experience, and it doesn't really matter how we end up sounding. Since we're all can almost only hear ourselves anyway, it doesn't really matter. Anyone else have thoughts about that?
Well, I call it true community music. You know, we're a community, and we create music. We don't perform, and that's what, you know, really pleasing me.
I like it because it's very democratic. Anyone is welcome to join. It doesn't matter if you have any talent or if you have perfect pitch or anything. And we all take turns leading songs and picking songs. And it's about sharing and bringing people together into the experience.
I don't know what they're talking about. I think it sounds great. I love it.
So do I. Then I'm one of those people who, given the choice between Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau and Bob Dylan, will always go for Bob Dylan. But then I'll always go for Hans Hotter over either of those two, expression over technique. Say something, if you would, about where you find traces of this tradition in other forms of music.
Well, the very first night that I heard Sacred Harp music, I was dragged to the singing by a very good friend of mine. And I have a strong folk music background, and I heard one of the songs that was sung in Sacred Harp, 338, Sawyer's Exit. And the melody for that song had been recycled by Pete Seeger for a song called Acres and Acres of Clams. And so as soon as I heard that, I was hooked.
Well, it's been oftentimes Sacred Harp music has been referred to as a folk organum, that, in other words, when the birth of polyphony happened, a lot of the tunes were written in fourths and fifths, and that kind of parallel harmonies. And Sacred Harp just kind of gathers up that tonal quality, that modal sound that has been suppressed, as you said, in a lot of classical music traditions, and revivifies it in some pretty interesting ways.
I think one thing that was happening in the early days of the country and of the, you know, the colonies is that you had very little singing background for these congregations, and this is, you know, largely Christian groups of people. And at the same time, there weren't a lot of preachers to go around. So in rural communities, you'd have a lot of singing at and also, you know, at church and elsewhere. You would find singing school teachers going around teaching people how to sing a cappella. There was no organs in these poorer places, and there was not much sheet music. But what's happening is these same people who are teaching are also writing tunes, but they don't know what's going on in Europe. They don't have any sense that for standard a cappella music, you shouldn't have parallel octaves or parallel fifths. They're writing things which are very unique, and that's what ended up being suppressed later once Boston started getting organs, once New York City started getting performers from Europe. They started realizing, oh, it's so much better to do it this other way. This is the progressive way. This is the way Europe is doing it. And then this music kind of, it took root in the South and in places where it weren't quite so progressive and so much interested in good music.
They're interested in the best music.
Well, I understand you've brought along some recordings of singings with a very, very long history. And why don't we hear one or two of those, and you can say a few words either up front, like right now, or afterward.
Well, just to intro it, the tunes you're going to hear are from a convention. And conventions are kind of the peak experiences of the Sacred Harp culture. What we're doing here might be called a practice singing, where a dozen or 15 or 20 people get together and sing. And but throughout the country, all over the country, many, many times a year, there are conventions that draw anywhere from 100 people to 400 people. And the sound that's produced when you get that volume of committed voices all pouring into the center of the hollow square together is something that's really quite amazing. What you're going to hear are a couple of cuts from the 150th annual Chattahoochee Sacred Harp Singing Convention in Carrollton, Georgia. I think that was in 2002, is that right? And so I think they're now at the 155th convention coming up this summer. That's the longest lasting continual Sacred Harp music convention in the country.
I think they skipped a year during the Civil War.
They did.
All right, let's hear a track or two. Listening to Classics Without Walls on KUSF. I'm M. Theo, and in the studio with me is a passel of shape note singers generating all kinds of heat and light. Time for a public service announcement from the good old KUSF Community Notebook. Working in a nonprofit? Interested in learning more about nonprofit management? The University of San Francisco's Institute of Nonprofit Organization Management has scholarships available for USF's Masters of Nonprofit Administration. For more information on this and other scholarships, go to www.usfworkingadults.net. Much needed program. So if you are contributing to, trying to make a nonprofit work, well, help definitely available right here up on Ignatian Heights at USF. And in fact, as kind of a second public service announcement, there's a shape note singing in progress this evening, and there's a much bigger one about to happen on Saturday. Tell us about that.
Well, I wanted to say that, well, we're singing this Saturday, not just the 14 or so of us, but we'll probably have closing in on 100 people. People are coming from, actually, as far as Alaska, but up and down the western coast. There's no charge to arrive. We're going to be singing at the Potrero Hill Neighborhood Club all day. We have a potluck around lunchtime. You show up, you sing, you look at a book if you want, you just listen in if you wish. Although, as you may have noticed, it's more fun to sing than to listen to. And that's kind of what we do all day. And it's kind of a weird thing that we would enjoy this so much. Like, we are singing from the same hymnal over and over. But it's... we'll be starting. Everyone's saying, tell them when it is, and how they can find out more. So if you show up between 9 and 9:30, the Potrero Hill Neighborhood Clubhouse is at 953 DeHarrow Street. We'll be singing until 3:30 in the afternoon. You can find out more information at fasola.org. That stands for the syllables and the solfege we sing. So it's fasola.org/sf/Golden Gate, which is our Golden Gate singing. There's no cost involved. You come Saturday, you sing, you don't sing, you find out what this weird thing is all about. You can tell your friends, yes, that's the thing that was in Cold Mountain. That was the thing that was in Time Magazine, and I want to go back, and I don't ever want to have anything else to do with it again.
And this is the fourth annual.
Fourth annual.
Golden Gate singing.
Okay, so let's do 159. That's got some of these parallel fifths that the music composing teachers warned us against.
I think 159 is really interesting. It's called Wondrous Love. And obviously, like all these songs, has Christian lyrics, but the tune is actually co-opted from an old pirate tune. Captain Kidd, as I sailed on. He's a pirate who got framed and admitted for killing various people. So this is just all these little sort of nooks and crannies in this tradition I find really interesting.
La fa la fa la.
Oh,
grew up Catholic, and we would sing this in church, but it sounded a lot different. It was, we would sing it really, really slowly and sweetly in church, and when I started singing Sacred Harp, the first time I heard Wondrous Love being sung the Sacred Harp style, I was very surprised.
a lot of churches watered down the lyrics, too, I think. The original text more bleak. Mm-hmm.
But no matter how bleak the lyrics, you always feel great after singing the most mournful songs in the most mournful keys. And there's something about the power. It's not designed to be a pretty event. It's a kind of shouting event. And the experience of doing it for a full day, singing for 6 hours with some breaks, and we have a wonderful meal in the middle of the day. But the experience of singing for so long at that kind of level of energy and emotion and sound, you are different at the end of the day than when you came.
I want to call 454, and I want to just mention that one of the things that people are talking about is the fact that it's called Sacred Harp, and the Sacred Harp is a reference to the human voice. And so the song that I'm going to call A Better Land is actually a major key song, with one of the happier lyrics, and a lot of references to the making of music itself as being one of the wonderful things that a human being can do, either on this side or the other.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the wrong key.
Separate entrance, and it was one way of getting everybody kind of started in their part so they could be secure when everybody else comes in. But it's also one of the most fun things to do in this genre.
And then the word fugue actually comes from a root that means to chase or to run after, and so the parts chase and run after each other.
So
okay.
Not fugues in the Bach style, of course.
La, fa, la, fa, la, la, la. La 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 la
About how this music is open to everyone of all abilities. And I think that because the lyrics are so Christian, we should mention that it's also very open to people of any affiliation or non-affiliation with any religious ideas. I was surprised when I started singing to find there were not just people who weren't Christian, but there are people who were, it's mostly Baptist sort of lyrics and theology for the most part, but there's Jewish people and Hindu people, and there's lots and lots of atheists and agnostics, especially in the North or in California. Maybe in the South you'll find a little bit more Baptists by percentage singing this music. But I think a lot of us, either the lyrics speak to us on a sort of more metaphysical level or a metaphorical level, or we just sort of are so excited about the community and the other affects that we don't really mind some of the texts, which may jar a little bit more with or don't resonate so much with ourselves. So it's really interesting, another sort of nook and cranny about this tradition, that there is this like really strong Christian lyrics, and yet it seems to attract lots of people who don't have that sort of Bible-thumping sort of approach to life and theology.
I'd like to sing 209, and we were talking earlier about how some of the lyrics are a little stronger maybe in this tradition than people might be used to in their usual church hymnals. And one of the things I like is how it talks so honestly about death. People say, why do you keep singing so many songs about death? I mean, isn't that depressing? But I think they're just really honest. There's songs in here that are, personal crises of faith. This song, just talks really honestly about death, and it's kind of a dark song. It's not anything promising heaven on the other side. And maybe it is a little more comforting to someone who does come from that tradition and does believe that. But, I like that personal reflection. Okay, so 209, it's called Evening Shade.
La-fa-la-fa-la.
Me, la sofa, me, la sofa, me. child, I hate poor child, I hate poor child, I hate poor child, and now so high, the Lord of heaven, air and sky. I hate poor child, and now so high, the Lord of heaven, air and sky.
I hate poor child, I hate poor child, I hate poor child, I hate poor child, and now so high, the Lord of heaven, air and sky. I hate poor child.
I a poor child instead of I a poor child, and somehow everybody knows this. Somewhere in the 19th century, someone just decided that.
I was shocked by it at first, and finally when I went singing down south, I was convinced that that was correct pronunciation.
Well, in Texas, they sing it the opposite. All the ones where we sing they say a, and vice versa. So that was very shocking. Yeah, even because we sing these songs so often, even if you travel to another state and you hear just a slight difference, it's so jarring, you know. But that's the regional tradition. And I love that, just those little, you know, subtleties.
When we came back from the south, in singing Jerusalem, and everybody sings Jerusalem, and we sing Jerusalem, and we came back singing Hallelujah instead of Hallelujah.
And many of us have traveled to singings in another state, and there's many, many of them in Alabama and Georgia. They're always really happy to have people from California come.
It's great because you learn songs that you don't normally sing.
One of the other things that's really amazing about this tradition is how people from all different ages, all different kinds of people come together. So in this room, we probably span, well, I don't know,
a million
five
years.
Decades, I would say, something like that. People from our 20s up into our early 60s in this room right now, and everyone in between. And at a convention, you could have, you know, just all kinds of people, all different ages, people who are pierced and tattooed, Mennonite women in their bonnets, a Buddhist nun with her head shaved. These are all people we've actually met.
Yeah, she's not exaggerating.
No, I'm not. So that's just sociologically such an interesting cross section and a meeting place for people, like Mark was saying before, across so many different boundaries that would usually separate us.
Okay. I think people might be interested to hear about the pitching, since all the pitch is relative, and I understand that the role of giving the pitch is either the leader's prerogative or someone who is entrusted with that role. Say a little about that tradition.
It's a mystery. Generally somebody, over a period of time, we come to learn how to pitch because of familiarity with the tunes. And so in this group, for example, there are a number of us here who are quite good pitchers. I just happen to be the one that's designated for this particular occasion. But we pitch in relative pitch, and so what that means is we don't have absolute perfect pitch. We pitch according to the room, the time of day, and so earlier in the morning we pitch a little lower. As the day revs up, we pitch a little higher. After lunch, we pitch really high, and then as the day wears down, you start pitching the tunes a little lower again as voices become tired. You have to be familiar enough with the tunes to look ahead at all the parts to see if the trebles are going to have some ridiculously high note, you know, three steps above the staff that they're going to have to try to hit, or if the basses are going to have to go down into the basement and some impossibly low note. Now, it's a lot to keep in mind, and we're all learning as we do it. It's a hit or miss sort of a thing sometimes. Like that last tune, I pitched definitely too high.
I didn't think so.
Oh, you didn't
think
so? Okay, never mind.
I think what's interesting is if a composer like William Billings happens to pitch a particular tune in, say, F major, he didn't do that because he wanted it to sound like it was an F major. He just chose that because it would fit on the page the best. He doesn't really care. We might pitch it in A major, well, maybe like E major or E flat major, just depending on whether our voices seem to fit it or not. We don't think E major or E flat major. We just sort of canvas the room and think, oh, it was high last time, we'll pitch a little low for the next time, something like that.
And different singing localities have different pitching cultures, too. I think our group, you know, the people who sing in the Bay Area tend to pitch, like, a little bit high. although I like it.
And it makes every song different every time, different paces, different people straining.
You don't have to worry about the particular umpire's strike zone as pitchers, correct? Let's hear some more.
Okay.
All right. 49 on the bottom.
Believe it or not, a moment has come that for some, we can't believe it's here, and for others, it couldn't possibly come soon enough. And that is, the hour is at an end. One of the things I love about this tradition is that you can say something like that, and you all appreciate it, rather than getting offended. To me, that's musicians at their best. Say a word once more about the singing coming this Saturday.
It's the fourth annual Golden Gate Sacred Harp Singing this Saturday, April 26th, from 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. And it's located at the Potrero Hill Neighborhood House, 953 DeHaro Street, in the cross street of Southern Heights in San Francisco, up on the top of Potrero Hill. For more information, fasola.org/sf/Golden Gate. Please come. You'll really enjoy it.
And you're welcome to just drop in for a short time, too.
Oh, and it's free lunch.
word dear to all the musicians I know. Thank you, one and all, David and all the rest of you. This group has no name because it's ad hoc. People show up and sing one of the great American art forms, and please do come back.